In the last period, we were looking at the second trumpet. And I mentioned to you that there was an attack made by the emperor in the east in conjunction with people from the west to try to dispossess the Vandals from Carthage and destroy them. And they came with 1,113 ships of war. And the historical name for that battle is the Battle of Cap Bon in 468 AD. And it just so happens that their effort was frustrated and the Vandals continued to rule the sea. So now we moved to the next trumpet. We already saw that the first trumpet, according to the Millerite and early SDA interpretations, was the Goths under Alaric. The second trumpet was the Vandals under Genseric. The third trumpet, as we'll see, is the Huns under Attila. If you remember, Attila came from the east, from Asia, with a horde of Huns. And the Huns were so powerful that they gathered under their banner many of the Germanic tribes. They overcame the Germanic tribes and they were just subject to him. So at the command of Attila, all the tribes would get up and fight and battle. So he went to the inside portion of the empire, of the Roman Empire, and he was just causing a tremendous devastation. He would style himself the scourge of God. So he would attack and he would brag saying, "Where my horse has trod, the grass never grows again." That was his way of bragging of the destruction that he caused. So the empire had to move a lot of the legions to be able to cope with him. And they had major battles. And there was one time that he was at a certain city. He had just overcome the city. And he was entering in with his armies to gather the spoil, because that's what they would do, to plunder the city. But at the distance, they saw the Roman army coming to rescue the city. And he was a very wise general as well. So what he did was he ordered his army to leave the city without getting anything, just go. And they followed him. And he went to a larger field where he could maneuver the horse, because their principal force of attack was the horse. So they would need a larger place for the maneuvers. So when he went there, he was waiting for the enemies to come. And for 2 years, he was devastating the empire. And all the other Germanic tribes under his control were just subject to him. They were very submissive. They didn't take any stand on their own. They would be following him. And then there came a battle of Chalons, or Chalon, C-H-A-L-O-N-S, I think. And that was a battle of the Germanic tribes against their own peoples. So every tribe was fighting on their own, basically. And it was almost the end of the Huns' power, right? But the way Attila died was very interesting. He was going to Rome to take possession of the city. So he was coming to destroy the city. But the Pope came to him requesting that he wouldn't come into the city, right? And there was a request that Attila made. He wanted the hand of a certain princess, the Princess Honoria. She was the sister of the emperor. So he says, "Let me marry her and I'll not destroy the city." And they said, okay. So they would give him the hand of the princess. But since she couldn't be ready on time, there were some preparations for the wedding. So he accepted her maid for a while. in her stead until she would be ready, right? And then he married her maid. He had many wives, right? So when the nuptial night came, he was just taking too long to wake up in the next day. So his soldiers and friends started knocking the door and he wouldn't come up. So they broke into the room, and when they came in, they found the maid hiding her face, you know, not knowing what to do, putting her hand up over her head, and Attila was dead. Apparently a vein burst, and the blood, instead of gushing out of the mouth, went into his lungs, and he was suffocated. So he only lasted a couple years. After that, the power of the Huns was broken, but the empire had suffered much. When the Huns invaded Gaul, it was a terrible devastation. You know, everywhere they passed, it was a terrible devastation. You can see here a little bit of the trajectory that they made, right? This was the Battle of Chalons. They also came here. That's when he turned around, because he accepted the princess instead of the city. And he was just destroying a lot of things. So that was the third trumpet, or the third scourge over the Roman power, right? For the destruction of the empire. Uriah Smith in Daniel in the Revelation says, it is here premised that this trumpet has allusion to the desolating wars and furious invasions of Attila against the Roman power, which he carried on at the head of his hordes of Huns. Speaking of this warrior, particularly of his personal appearance, Mr. Barnes says, in the manner of his appearance, he strongly resembled a brilliant meteor flashing in the sky. He came from the east, gathering his Huns, and poured them down, as we shall see, with the rapidity of a flashing meteor, suddenly on the empire. He regarded himself also as devoted to Mars, the god of war, and was accustomed to array himself in a peculiarly brilliant manner, so that his appearance, in the language of his flatterers, was such as to dazzle the eyes of the beholders. In speaking of the locality of the events predicted by this trumpet, Mr. Barn has this note. It is said particularly that the effect would be on the rivers and on the fountains of waters. If this has a literal application, or if, as was supposed in the case of the second trumpet, the language used was such as had reference to the portion of the empire that would be particularly affected by the hostile invasion, then we may suppose that this refers to those portions of the empire that abounded in rivers and streams, and more particularly those in which the rivers and streams had their own origin, for the effect was permanently in the fountains of waters. As a matter of fact, the principal operations of Attila were on the regions of the Alps and on the portions of the empire whence the rivers flow down into Italy. If you look at the third trumpet, you will see that this star that falls from heaven falls on the fountains of waters. The fountains of waters for Europe, for the big rivers, are the Alps. That's where Attila worked on and attacked. The principal operations were there. So you can see how the application of the prophecy fulfills correctly in Attila's attacks. So how about the fourth trumpet? How was the Millerite and early SDA interpretation? The Heruli under Odoacer. So Uriah Smith in Daniel Revelation says, we understand that this trumpet symbolizes the career of Odoacer, the barbarian monarch who was so intimately connected with the downfall of Western Rome. The symbols, the sun, moon, and stars, for they are undoubtedly here used as symbols, evidently denote the great luminaries of the Roman government, its emperors, senators, and consuls. So one of the first things that Odoacer did once he entered Rome was to depose the emperor. So, who was the first Roman emperor? The first Roman emperor, his name was Octavius, but his assumed name was Augustus, right? Augustus Caesar. He was the nephew of Julius Caesar. Julius Caesar was the first great ruler, but he wasn't the first emperor, right? So Augustus was the first emperor. Now, who was Romulus, according to the annals of Rome? Who was Romulus? Romulus was the founder of Rome, and he was the first king of Rome. It's interesting to notice that the last emperor of Rome had the name Romulus, and his name was Augustus, but they changed his name to Augustulus, which means little Augustus. And the reason is he was very young. His father, Aristus, wanted to rule, but for some reason he didn't want to be the emperor. So he let his son be the emperor. So when Odoacer enters Rome, he deposes Romulus Augustulus on September of 476. That's considered the end of the Roman Empire. That date is considered the end of the Western Roman Empire. He then banned the deposed emperor and reigned for some time. He didn't kill the emperor. He banned him. Having made a law that the church could not alienate its own property, he incurred the enmity of the papacy, and the papacy was determined to destroy him. Can you believe that? He said, the church cannot alienate, that means to give away or to dispose of its own property. It's a sacred property. He made that law. The papacy was furious. They said, how can he do that? And try to tell us what we can do and what we can't do. So they were furious. And they wanted to destroy him. So they arranged or plotted with Theodoric, the Ostrogoth, that he should ask the Emperor Zeno to allow him to have Italy and fight against Odoacer. And that's what Theodoric did. He wrote a letter to Zeno in which he said basically, let me fight this man that is causing problems to the church, and I'll fight for you. If I die, you just have gotten rid of some expensive friend. And if I win, then, it will be better. Italy will be relieved of this. So Zeno allowed him to do that. Allowed him to fight against Odoacer. And he went and besieged Odoacer for 3 years in Ravenna. At last, Odoacer signed a peace treaty. And after he signed the peace treaty, I think 10 days later, there was a banquet. And he was murdered in the banquet. So Theodoric now became the ruler of Rome and of Italy and of Ravenna and everything. So amazingly enough, the Heruli were Arians. It was a belief that had originated, at least became prominent, with Arius. And Arius was, the way he was believing was that Christ was created, that Christ was a created being. And the Catholic Church didn't believe that Christ was a created being. So they made war against that belief. And the Heruli were Arians. They believed that. But amazingly enough, the Ostrogoths were also Arians. So you may think, why would the papacy want to put the Ostrogoths to fight against the Heruli if they were both Arians? if they were both enemies of the papacy. Now the Catholic or the papacy will never think twice before they put two of their enemies, even though one will replace the other. They will put two of their enemies to fight because at least they will get rid of one. It's better to have one enemy than two enemies. So they just asked him to fight the Herulae, and he did, and he overcame them, and then he established the Ostrogothic kingdom in Italy. And believe me or not, the peace that ruled in Italy when the Ostrogoths were reigning was unbelievable, was amazing. There was a saying that was like this: one could leave a purse of gold in the field and you wouldn't be safe. Such was the rule of the Ostrogoths in Rome. They really established law and order. There was one time that the Ostrogoths came to a city, and they overcame a city, and they wouldn't take the booty, they wouldn't take the spoil, because they had not received the command that they could do that from their ruler. Now, if you understand anything about wars, especially in the past, as soon as they had any chance, they would take the booty, right? They would take the spoil. But these guys were waiting because the commander didn't say anything, so let's just wait. This is amazing. So it was very orderly. There was another characteristic of Theodoric. He believed in separation of church and state. And for that reason, the papacy wanted to destroy him as well. He wouldn't take part in the election of the popes. Although sometimes both parties were requesting him, please endorse us, endorse our candidate. You know, when the popes were elected, the cardinals were divided in parties, trying to elect one or the other. So he wouldn't take part. He would keep a total separation of church and state. The church was defended just like any other building or property was defended. And the bishops and the clerics were arraigned before tribunals just like other people. And they hated him for that, because they wanted privileges above the other people. And his own mother became Catholic. That means left Arianism and became Catholic. And he didn't do anything. He just let her choose whatever she wanted. So he would give freedom of religion to his citizens. The Catholics were not persecuted at all during his reign. So, it's an amazing thing. And he wouldn't endorse the Pope that was elected. He would say, I have no part with this. You elect your own and you can decide whatever you want. I don't need to be endorsing who is elected and who is not. So, he was a model of what would really work for separation of church and state, and the blessing that it is to the people. Wherever there is freedom of religion, the people are free. The citizens live well, live better, you know. Just look at America, especially in the earlier years, how freedom of religion brought such a blessing to this country. The two freedoms, a civil freedom and religious freedom. So, a kingdom without a king, that means a republic, a country that is a republic, and a church without a pope, that means a free church, a church that can believe, everybody can believe what they want according to their own conscience, instead of having the pope to be conscience for them. Instead of having the clerics of the church to decide for them what is true and what is not true. If you study your Bible, you can know for yourself. It doesn't mean that you don't need to join the church. You will join the church because the church is the body of Christ. But the church cannot force you to join her or to believe or disbelieve something. You have to be convinced by your own study, the Holy Spirit teaching you through the Bible, right? So freedom of religion was part of the Ostrogothic rule in Italy. And the result of that was amazing. Now the papacy decided to destroy the Ostrogoths as well. So they arranged with the Emperor of the East, and he sent Belisarius, who entered Rome, and then the Ostrogoths came and besieged him for a certain time, and they perished. I think it was 2 years, and they perished in the siege. And then they disbanded, elected a new king, but then a few years later, they were completely disappeared from history. That people was gone. So the Herulite were the first of the peoples to be destroyed by the papacy. And the reason they were destroyed is because Odoacer made laws that would restrict the so-called liberty of the papacy. So they hated him for that, they destroyed him. Remember Daniel 7 talks about the 10 horns that come up? And 3 of the horns are plucked up, they are removed by that little horn that comes up. The little horn that comes up is the papacy. The papacy destroys 3 of these 10 horns. The first of them is the Herulite, as we saw here. The second is the Vandals. And the third of these horns is the Ostrogoths in the year 538. Once that is finished, you start the 1260 years of papal supremacy. Okay, because the papacy had no known enemies that could stop the papacy. So 1260 years count from 538 when they plucked up or uprooted the third of the horns, of the third of the 10 horns. So in the fourth trumpet it says that the third part of the sun was smitten, and of the moon and of the stars. During the reign of Odoacer, the sun was smitten, which is the emperor, or the office of emperor in the West was abolished. So he deposed the emperor, and he didn't become an emperor. He became a king. He said, this office is closed. There's no more. And so that was the smiting of the sun. Now, during the reign of the Ostrogoths, the moon and the stars were still shining. That means they didn't end the Senate and the consuls. But Justinian, after the destruction of the Ostrogoths, he then ended the consuls. Let's read here. It says, but in their prophetic order, the consulship and the Senate of Rome met their fate, though they fell not by the hand of Vandals or of Goths. The next revolution in Italy was in subjection to Belisarius, the general of Justinian, emperor of the East. He did not spare what the barbarians had hallowed. The Roman consulship extinguished by Justinian, AD 541, is the title of the last paragraph of the 40th chapter of Gibbon's History of the Decline and Fall of Rome. The succession of the consuls finally ceased in the 13th year of Justinian, whose despotic temper might be gratified by the silent extinction of a title which admonished the Romans of their ancient freedom. Then we come to the end of the fourth trumpet. Do you see how historically these trumpets were fulfilled? Were you able to see that? As we showed, that's what the Millerites believed. That's what they wrote about. That's what the early pioneers wrote about. And when you get to the fifth and the sixth trumpet, you have even Ellen White in great controversy confirming what the Millerites were teaching. So the people today that are taking these trumpets and putting them all in the future or interpreting them in a different way amazingly enough, they are going even against the spirit of prophecy. It's surprising. Recently I saw somebody interpreting these trumpets to be like during the plagues, when the plagues are falling. Oh, that's when the star comes from heaven and hits the earth and many people die because of the shock and whatever. I was so surprised. An Adventist, a long time Adventist, believing such a crooked interpretation. And in further inquiry, I understood that it's not the first time that that person is doing this. That person repeatedly fell into futurism. Now, can we talk about it a little bit in 2 minutes? And then we'll stop here and we'll continue tomorrow by God's grace. So, the reformers were all interpreting the little horn to be the papacy. We're going to talk about John Wycliffe, John Huss, Martin Luther, Zwingli, you know, Calvin, everybody. They were interpreting the little horn, the man of sin, and the Antichrist to be the papacy. That caused a revolution. It caused the Reformation. And many countries were accepting the Reformation. What did the papacy do in order to oppose this? Have you heard of the Counter-Reformation? Have you heard of the Council of Trent? It started in the 1540s and it lasted about 18 years. One council. One council of the Catholic Church, the Council of Trent, lasted about 18 years. And in that council, they wanted to oppose the Reformation, to counteract the Reformation. In that council was created the Order of the Jesuits, if you understand what that means. In Great Controversy, Ellen White describes this. They were the champions of popery. There was no evil that was so vile for them to commit. They would do anything. You just read their vow, you're amazed. And that they actually practiced throughout history. Okay? So in that council was created the Order of the Jesuits. And there were two men appointed in that council to bring up different interpretations than the reformers were having. The reformers were saying, oh, the man of sin is the papacy. The Antichrist is the papacy. And the little horn is the papacy. So these two men created two different conflicting theories. One is called preterism for the past. The other is called futurism for the future. In both of them, they interpreted the symbols to be something completely different than what the reformers were saying, than the Catholic Church. So the papacy was not anymore the Antichrist, because the Antichrist is somebody that will come in the future. It has nothing to do with the papacy, right? Francisco Ribera, he created futurism. The other man, Luis de Alcácer, created preterism. That means Nero, the Emperor Nero, was the Antichrist. You know, and the little horn was Antiochus Epiphanes, a Syrian king. Right? So both of these interpretations left the papacy out of the prophecies that would speak against her. And today, almost all the evangelical churches believe in futurism. You know the movie or the series Left Behind? They talk about how the Antichrist will come in the future and they're rebuilding Jerusalem, and then he will sit in the temple of God in Jerusalem here in Palestine, right? So he will sit in the temple of God for 3.5 years, and then the church is secretly raptured. This is all based on futurism, all based on Francisco Ribera's teaching. It was to avoid the Catholic Church being the system of Antichrist, right? And then preterism, I think the official belief of the Roman Church is preterism. So as you see, the interpretation the reformers had is being forgotten. There's basically only a few people that believe in what the reformers believe in the Reformation, which is historicism. You have historicism, preterism, and futurism. Historicism believes that the papacy is the Antichrist and interprets the symbols like that. So I would invite you to study more about this and look into this. Okay, we finished the fourth trumpet, and we will begin tomorrow with the woes and the last trumpets to understand what they mean.